This podcast is sponsored by the Tree of Life Memorials and Digital in Stone. This is a new platform to create digital memorials, environmental legacies, and fine art monuments. This way we could share the stories, preserve the memories, conserve the land, and connect the souls, because love never dies.
This podcast does not provide medical nor legal advice. Please listen to the complete disclosure at the end of the recording.
Hello and welcome to Everyone Dies, the podcast where we talk about serious illness, dying, death, and bereavement. I'm Marianne Matzo, a nurse practitioner, and I use my experience from working as a nurse for 46 years to help answer your questions about what happens at the end of life.
And I'm Charlie Navarette, an actor in New York City, and here to offer an every person viewpoint to our podcast. We are both here because we believe that the more you know, the better prepared you are to make difficult decisions before a crisis hits.
So welcome to this week's show. Please relax and get yourself something stout to drink and some pie. And thank you for spending the next hour with Charlie and me as we talk about feeding the grieving, a situation where you can literally say, let them eat cake. Like the BBC, we see our show as offering entertainment, enlightenment, and education, and divide that into three halves to address each of these goals. Our main topic is in the second half, so feel free to forward to that natter-free zone if you're in a hurry. In the first half, we have our recipe of the week, which, having tested the recipe, is delicious. Charlie has an essay by Jose Andres. And in the second half, I'll be talking about creating a new tradition for our communities, grief groceries. And in the third half, Charlie talks about the power of holding hands. And our recipe this week is one of the basics of life, bread. And if you missed the COVID bread baking craze, we've got you covered. This bread is perfectly fluffy inside and wonderfully crispy outside, so that making homemade bread has never been easier. This homemade slow cooker bread has only 5 ingredients that you'll likely have right there in your pantry, except for Charlie. He doesn't have a pantry or food.
Huh?
So.
I live in New York. We have this little thing called takeout and food delivery, which is really great.
Yeah. So you can bake bread while listening to our podcast. Imagine showing up at your next funeral lunch with warm bread and a stick of butter. This will put all the other casseroles to shame. Bon appetit!
Jose Andres and his wife Patricia founded World Central Kitchen in 2010. The U.S.-based organization delivers food to people on the front lines of natural and humanitarian disasters around the world. The following opinion piece, published in the New York Times, is titled, Let People Eat. Our resource section has information about World Central Kitchen and how you can donate to their important work. In the worst conditions you can imagine, after hurricanes, earthquakes, bombs, and gunfire, the best of humanity shows up. Not once or twice, but always. 7 people killed on a World Central Kitchen mission in Gaza on Monday, April 1st, were the best of humanity. They are not faceless or nameless. They are not generic aid workers or collateral damage in war. Saifuddin Issam Ayad Abutaha, John Chapman, Jacob Flitkinger, Zami Franken, James Henderson, James Kirby, and Damian Sobel risked everything for the most fundamentally human activity, to share food with others. These are people I served alongside in Ukraine, Turkey, Morocco, the Bahamas, Indonesia, Mexico, Gaza, and Israel. They were far more than heroes. Their work was based on the simple belief that food is a universal human right. It is not conditional on being good or bad, rich or poor, left or right. We do not ask what religion you belong to. We just ask how many meals you need. From day one, we have fed Israelis as well as Palestinians. Across Israel, we have served more than 1.75 million hot meals. We have fed families displaced by Hezbollah rockets in the north. We have fed grieving families from the south. We delivered meals to the hospitals where hostages were reunited with their families. We have called consistently, repeatedly, and passionately for the release of all the hostages. All the while, we have communicated extensively with Israeli military and civilian officials. At the same time, we have worked closely with community leaders in Gaza, as well as Arab nations in the region. There is no way to bring a full ship of food to Gaza without doing so. That's how we served more than 43 million meals in Gaza, preparing hot food in 68 community kitchens where Palestinians are feeding Palestinians. We know Israelis. Israelis, in their heart of hearts, know that food is not a weapon of war. Israel is better than the way this war is being waged. It is better than blocking food and medicine to civilians. It is better than killing aid workers who had coordinated their movements with the Israeli Defense Forces. The Israeli government needs to open more land routes for food and medicine today. It needs to stop killing civilians and aid workers today. It needs to start the long journey to peace today. In the worst conditions, after the worst terrorist attack in its history, it's time for the best of Israel to show up. You cannot save the hostages by bombing every building in Gaza. You cannot win this war by starving an entire population. We welcome the government's promise of an investigation into how and why members of our World Central Kitchen family were killed. That investigation needs to stop at the top, not just the bottom. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said of the Israeli killings of our team, "It happens in war." It was a direct attack on clearly marked vehicles whose movements were known by the Israeli Defense Forces. It was also the direct result of a policy that squeezed humanitarian aid to desperate levels. Our team was en route from a delivery of almost 400 tons of aid by sea, our second shipment, funded by the United Arab Emirates, supported by Cyprus, and with clearance from the Israeli Defense Forces. The team members put their lives at risk precisely because this food aid is so rare and desperately needed. According to the Integrated Food Security Phased Classification Global Initiative, half the population of Gaza, 1.1 million people, faces the imminent risk of famine. The team would not have made this journey if there were enough food traveling by truck across land to feed the people of Gaza. The peoples of the Mediterranean and Middle East, regardless of ethnicity and religion, share a culture that values food as a powerful statement of humanity and hospitality, of our shared hope for a better tomorrow. There's a reason at this special time of year, Christians make Easter eggs, Muslims eat an egg after iftar dinners, and an egg sits on the Seder plate. This symbol of life and hope reborn in spring extends across religions and cultures. I have been a stranger at Seder dinners. I have heard the ancient Passover stories about being a stranger in the land of Egypt, the commandment to remember, with a feast before you, that the children of Israel were once slaves. It is not a sign of weakness to feed strangers. It is a sign of strength. The people of Israel need to remember, at this darkest hour, what strength truly looks like. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to our webpage for this week's recipe for crockpot bread and additional resources for this program. Your tax-deductible donations are always welcome so that we can continue to offer you quality programming. Thank you in advance for making your donation at www.everyonedies.org. That's everythenumber1dies.org. You can also donate a bit every week at our site on Patreon. Just go to www.patreon.com. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and search for Everyone Dies. Marianne?
Thank you, Charlie. Did you go to camp as a youngster and missed your family? And then on mail day, a box arrives with cookies from your mom and a new strawberry lip gloss and a note from everyone in your family? Yeah, me neither. But I saw the effect that it had on other kids who felt remembered and loved and nurtured because they received a care package. Even the name tells us that someone cared. We're never too old to love that feeling of the surprise that lurks in that box, the collection of things that shows that someone knows what we like and loves us. This is especially true when we're grieving and feeling at our worst, like being left at camp with no one to drive us home. Expressions of love look different for everyone. Some people need to be pampered and others want to be left alone. Give your loved ones the gift of independence and something to occupy their time with some grief groceries. Not only will a home-cooked meal do them good, but it'll also be one less thing on their mind. Food has long been associated with comfort and healing, and during times of grief, its significance becomes even more noticeable. Grieving individuals may find it challenging to focus on preparing meals or even eating, making the gesture of providing grief groceries particularly impactful. Nutrient-rich, easy-to-prepare foods can offer nourishment to both the body and the soul, aiding in the healing process. I saw this post on Facebook written by Hugh. I get it. Grief's a funny thing. It's the time of our life when we most need help, and also the time when asking for help is so hard. Not because we're ashamed to ask for help, although that happens sometimes too, but mostly because our brain just sort of shuts down. When my dad died, I looked functional, but I wasn't okay. Not at all. When the news got out and a ton of people flooding me with calls, texts, and direct messages, it was overwhelming. I really couldn't function. I sat on our swing in our yard and just stared into space. People called and asked what they could do to help. I had no idea. Well, anything you need at all, let me know, okay? Okay. They hung up, and I stared into space some more. I had no idea what to do, what I needed. I didn't even know what to ask for. Then a friend sent a text. This friend had met Dad once, but didn't really know him. But still, she knew I was hurting. I saw who it was and almost put the phone down without reading the text, but I saw the message and it stopped me. Will you be home at 8:30 tonight? What's weird is this friend lives 12 hours away from me. Yes, I replied. Okay. 10 minutes later, she said, Instacart will be there at 8:30. Open the door for them. What? Grief groceries. When Instacart showed up, they put 2 bags of groceries on my porch. Frozen pizzas, ice cream, Oreo cookies, tinned soup, Stouffer's lasagna, a gallon of milk, like that. Things that I could heat up if I needed a meal or pick out on if I needed a fat and sugar. Sometimes you just need to eat half a box of Oreos. Notice she didn't ask if I needed food. I would have said no. She just asked if I'd be home. Grief groceries. Another friend who lives out of town asked Renee to name a restaurant near a house where we like to eat. There's a local chain near a house that is sort of a deli. When we eat supper there, we spend about $25. Renee told her the name of the place. An hour later, there was a gift card in my inbox for $250. Yes, it's a lot of money, and I understand that not everyone can do that. But the wonderful thing was that because it was enough for multiple meals, we didn't try to save it for the right time. We ate there that night and take out from there several times a week for the next month on nights when I just didn't have the spoons to cook. Both of those gift givers knew something I didn't know, that when you're grieving, you don't want to make decisions. No, that's not quite it. You can't make decisions. You hit decision fatigue really fast. So I guess what I'm saying is don't ask grieving people to make big choices or decisions. How can I help is a big choice. But can I take the kids this afternoon so that you can have some time for yourself is a much smaller one. Will you be home tonight is a small choice. What restaurant do you like is a small decision. Just showing up to cut their grass because you know it needed cutting is loads better than asking, do you want me to cut your grass? Or, I'm going to Target. What can I get for you while I'm in there? Is better than, can I run errands for you? You won't always be like this. If you stick around, eventually they will surface and ways to be helpful will make themselves known. But in the first few days especially, it helps to remove as many decisions from their plate as possible. You can see by this post the effect that nurturing had on Hugh. I'd love for people to have Instacart deliver Oreos to me. I would find that nurturing. Here are three anticipated benefits of sending grief groceries. One, physical well-being. Grief groceries contribute to the physical well-being of the grieving person by providing them with nourishing foods and alleviating the stress of meal preparation. Two, emotional support. The thoughtfulness behind grief groceries communicates empathy and emotional support, showing the bereaved that they are not alone in their journey through grief. And three, practical assistance. Grief groceries offer practical assistance, reducing the burden of daily tasks and allowing the grieving individual to focus on their emotional healing. So, what do you include in grief groceries? First, comfort foods. Include familiar and comforting foods that the grieving person enjoys. This could be their favorite soup, a special type of tea, or a classic comfort food that brings consolation. And Oreos. Second, you want a nutrient-rich option. Ensure the packages include foods that are nourishing and easy to prepare. Consider items like fresh fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and protein sources to support overall well-being. Now, don't go overboard on the fresh items. I'd suggest a small bunch of grapes rather than that huge bag that the groceries fill. You know, you don't want the food to go rotten, and people will feel bad about that happening. So just small amounts. And you don't want the person who's receiving them to feel overwhelmed by how much there is. Now, ready-to-eat meals. Include ready-to-eat meals that are easily prepared to reduce the burden of cooking. This is a practical solution because people who are grieving have little time, energy, or concentration to prepare elaborate meals. Four, personalized treats. Add a personal touch by including treats or snacks that hold sentimental value for the grieving individual. Could be a favorite chocolate, a type of cookie, or any special item that brings a sense of familiarity. Five, comforting beverages. This can include beverages such as herbal teas, hot chocolate, or even a quality coffee blend. These could provide comfort and warmth during difficult moments. Or if you know somebody likes a certain kind of wine or a certain kind of bourbon, well, you could send that too. Six, essential and practical items. Consider including essential household items like tissues, paper towels, and other practical items that can help ease that everyone can use toilet paper and Kleenex. Seven, personal care items. Grieving often takes a toll on self-care. Include items like scented candles, bath salts, and gentle skincare products to encourage moments of relaxation and rejuvenation. Lastly, thoughtful gestures. Attach a heartfelt note expressing sympathy and support. A small bouquet of flowers or a personalized memento can add an extra caring touch. A soft shawl to wrap themselves in or fuzzy slippers are nice comforting items. Now, if the grieving family has children, there are a few gift ideas for kids. Books with meaningful messages about grief. and Everyone Dies, we have an award-winning book about death that's written for young children. It's available at Amazon, or you can get it at www.everyonediesthebook.com. 2, chalk to allow them to express themselves. You know, you can get a big box of chalk, send them out in the driveway, and they can draw and, you know, make hopscotch or whatever, and let them, through art, express how they're feeling. 3, a coloring book to give them a healthy outlet for their grief. 4, craft gift to make a memento in honor of their loved ones. There's a link in the show notes with ideas for memorial crafts for kids. 5, a stuffed animal for comfort. When it comes to delivering your care package, ordering groceries from a delivery service is a great way if you live far away. If you plan on dropping off the care package, don't just show up unannounced. Let them know that you have something to give them and would like to drop it off sometime. You can also offer to visit for a while if they're up to some company, but if not, you can simply leave it on their front step. Another option is to ship care packages to them. If you live farther away, this may be the best option. Just make sure to carefully wrap anything that could be breakable. Remember that care packages don't have to be a one-time thing. Grief doesn't end with a funeral, so your support shouldn't either. You can send a care package every few months or however often as you wish. Just make sure to not go overboard so that the grievers aren't overwhelmed. Grief groceries are meaningful in a practical way to extend support to those navigating the challenging path of grief. The next time a loved one is going through a difficult time, skip the "let me know what I can do" offer and drop off grief groceries instead. Provide comfort and emotional support that is needed with a simple yet meaningful and practical gesture. Any thoughts about that, Charles?
Well, it's thinking about, nutrients and comfort. I remember when Paul Newman's son committed suicide. Someone left Newman a bottle of whiskey on his desk. I think he was teaching somewhere at the time. Just left it there and walked away. And that was the grocery, if you will, that Newman needed when Michael, my son, was killed. Same thing. People, just wanted to come over. I just sent out a message to everyone. Thank you for all your thoughts. What I need right now is just to be left alone. And people respected that. And to your point, I mean, people say, well, listen, I'm going to drop off some food for you. I'm just going to leave something at your door. I'm going to knock and run away. You don't have to answer. And I really appreciated that. And in the end, I realized what I needed the most. At the time, I was staying in this old, what had been a carriage house 200 years ago. They had huge windows and all that sunlight that came in. I would just sit in that sunlight. I didn't even realize that's what I needed, that much light. So while, yes, I understand about, food and everything. It's just, and you would, said it too, it's what you need. It's what the grieving person needs. And just be respectful of that and be a, and to be aware of that. See what you need and don't be afraid to let people know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in our third half, studies show that holding hands can reduce pain and buffer stressful experiences, especially when it's with a romantic partner. It can help lower blood pressure, reduce pain, and buffer stressful experiences. The simple gesture can limit the impact stress has on our autonomic nervous system, which regulates unconscious bodily functions such as pupil dilation. When people feel they are under threat, Holding the hand of a loved one calms parts of the brain responsible for vigilance and emotional response. James Cone, a clinical psychologist and director of the Virginia Affective Neuroscience Laboratory at the University of Virginia, conducted experiments about hand-holding. One involved 16 married women who were placed in an MRI brain scan and faced with the threat of an electric shock. The brain scans showed that when these women held a stranger's hand, it lowered the stress of being shocked. But the effect was even more pronounced when they held their husband's hands. Specifically, the quality of the relationship mattered. The benefit of holding hands was strongest among women with the highest scores on marital quality tests. Later studies showed reduced stress in other kinds of relationships, including people who were dating or were just friends. According to Cone, the findings suggest that holding hands actually helps the brain offload the work of confronting stress. So when you reach out to hold a loved one's hands in a difficult time, it's like you're sharing the burden with them. Hands are a key part of how we explore the world from the moment we're born. Newborn babies are nearsighted. They can't see beyond a few inches from their faces, and also can't process colors. But our hands, even before we develop any motor skills, can process sensory information when they brush against the objects around us. Our palms are a tiny fraction of our skin's total surface area, yet they hold about 15% of our touch nerve fibers. Because of that incredibly high nerve density, our hands can distinguish between the many stimuli the world offers. A warm White Castle hamburger, a soft cat's fur, or cold snow. Also, the palms and especially fingertips contain special nerve endings called Meissner corpuscles. These give palms the power to react to the finest of touch, even at a depth of less than 10 micrometers, or about the width of a strand of a spider's web. They allow our hands to process braille and are the reason we immediately sense if something is slipping so that we can tighten our grasp. We also use touch to communicate our feelings. A 2009 study observed 124 pairs of strangers. One was blindfolded, and the second was asked to convey an emotion to the other simply using touch. Participants were able to recognize, without ever hearing or seeing the other person, emotions such as gratitude, disgust, happiness, and fear. A study from the University of London documented that participants were able to correctly identify another person's emotion just by looking at their hands without seeing their face. Don't be afraid to offer a hand to someone who is struggling. It may make all the difference.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I've been in...
I didn't know all that.
Yeah, I've been in situations like that. And I don't, well, I don't, well, yeah, I mean, you know, reaching out to someone or someone reaching out to me. And at the time, you know, I didn't intellectualize it. It was all emotional. But yes, I mean, reading, you know, when I read this, it's like, oh yeah, of course. But you just take it for granted. You know, I mean, the details it mentions here, it just, yeah, everything. Well, yeah, it does that. It does that exactly. You know, but as you and I both know, it's hard for people sometimes just to have even a simple touch. You know, people back away because they're just not comfortable with it, but at the same time, they want it.
Yeah, when I'm nursing and, you know, going in to do an assessment or something, I always put my hand near the patient's hand. And if they want to touch it or hold it, it's there for them. And if they don't, that's okay, but it's there. And most of the time, people will take my hand, you know, maybe, you know, because they're scared, they're sick, they're worried, whatever. And, you know, holding a nurse's hand is comforting. So I I don't know, I guess maybe I'm surprised by the science because it's just something that I do all the time. I always say about nursing, you know, the cool hand on the fevered brow is the
right
comfort of a nurse, you know.
So
people are
comfortable.
Yeah. People are pretty comfortable, in my experience, holding a nurse's hand. I think that, and rightly so, that's part of why we're there, you know, is that comfort.
So you never, I mean, as a nurse, you never actually, you just make your hand available. You don't actually take someone's hand or a quick squeeze or something like that?
No, because, you know, you don't want to violate a person's personal space. You want to be available for them. But not everybody likes to be touched. Some people have histories with inappropriate touch. And so I don't just reach to people, you know, but I let it known, you know, by my body language and the fact that my hand is there that they can, you know. But nurses are touching people all the time. I mean, there's, you know, we do a physical assessment. People expect us to touch them. And I think they also expect to be able to hold our hand or to get comfort from us.
So what about with friends?
I don't have any friends.
Right. I keep forgetting that. Right. You're like a little hoymet in a tree trunk.
with my orange peanuts that you sent me.
Yeah. No, seriously, though. I mean, wait a minute. That was serious. Sorry, folks. You just don't know the hidden side of Marianne. I don't know with friends, but you know what? Yeah, to your point, it depends on the level of that friend. If it's a close friend, I will just maybe, you know, lightly put my hand on that person's hand or just a quick squeeze. And then when I say back away is too strong, you know, quick squeeze, and I move my hand, but I keep it close to that person's hand. But you see, but then in that, I initiated it. And I do that, but yeah, only with, you know, the closest of friends. And that's it for this week's episode. Stay tuned for the continuing saga of Everyone Dies, and thank you for listening. This is Charlie Navarette, and from the New Yorker cartoonist Ross Chast in what she calls Everyday Hospice, enjoy your favorite foods, because at this point, why not?
Exactly. And I'm Marianne Matzo, and we'll see you next week. Remember, reach out and touch somebody's hand. You gonna sing with me?
Make this a better place if you can.
And every day is a gift.
This podcast does not provide medical advice. All discussion on this podcast, such as treatments, dosages, outcomes, charts, patient profiles, advice, messages, and any other discussion are for informational purposes only and are not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. Always seek the advice of your primary care practitioner or other qualified health providers with any questions that you may have regarding your health. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard from this podcast. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Everyone Dies does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, practitioners, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned in this podcast. Reliance on any information provided in this podcast by persons appearing on this podcast at the invitation of Everyone Dies or by other members is solely at your own risk.